Chapter 11, Samsara or Nirvana.
But those to whom God has granted enlightenment destroyed ignorance with knowledge, and the Supreme, like the sun, revealed to them the radiance. They merged with the spirit of beings, eternal light, and in action remained untainted by it. And death is not feared, even if it comes to you. The smallest of blessings.
Bhagavad Gita. A yogi, clad in a light cloak, sat in a cold cave. Below its vaults, a cold mountain river flowed, even on the hottest summer days, cutting through the mountain rocks and decorating its bed with marvelous gorges, the most amazing of which was a dry canyon that cleaved the ridge. It was called dry because during the summer, the water in it dried up, revealing enormous 20-meter whimsical walls to the gaze of a traveler walking along this channel. Walls carved by the mountain river loomed over the traveler, and it seemed they would crush him at any moment. Yet he could walk along the narrow labyrinth of these walls, which constantly ascended like hills, gaining height. In the rainy season, swift streams of waterfalls flowed down these hills, sweeping everything in their path, even carrying the trunks of huge trees along this channel. These gorges were rich in amazing caves. In the largest of them, speleologists had already discovered passages extending 11 kilometers into the depths of the earth. But the most astonishing of the passages connecting it with the caves of the Himalayas had not yet been found. In one of these caves, the ascetic, the master of humanity, Bhagavan, sat in the lotus position. Next to him was food that he had not touched for 40 days, and disciples approaching him along the narrow mountain path looked at him with concern. "Why has he not eaten for so long? Has he died, or perhaps has not yet returned from the world of Samadhi?" The body sat in the cave, but his spirit soared in invisible and amazing worlds, where he saw extraordinary beings, winged lions, snakes with 12 heads, 6 winged angels. Colorful spirals of intertwining energies danced around. Huge multicolored spheres repelled each other or merged with each other. Then he returned to his body. The dark cave seemed to light up with a subtle glow. An unknown voice whispered to him, "Now you can do anything. Fly, pass through walls, materialize objects." Bhagavan tuned in and rose above the floor, clasping his palms together, and materialized the crystal. "No, this is not why I practice yoga," he thought, and, sitting on a heap of hay, threw the crystal aside, which rattled as it rolled across the stone floor. "I want to achieve Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, complete and final liberation from this piece of flesh that I consider myself. Earthworms and moles pass through the ground, flies can fly, and water striders can walk on water. And our women materialize not only stones, but whole living beings during pregnancy and childbirth. I want to achieve enlightenment. I want to transform from a pitiful, tiny, dust-like creature in this infinite universe into God, dissolving in him like a drop in the ocean. The true miracle is not when we fly like flies, but when an ignorant one becomes a sage,
when the spirit, confined in the cage of the body, becomes infinite. When detached consciousness, thinking, I am the body, I am the name, I am a human, expands and becomes the universe, becomes the absolute, attains nirvana. With this realization, he began to meditate again to achieve his goal. Entering samadhi, he saw amazing worlds and universes, but he remembered what the great master El Morya had told him. Remember in a dream that you are sleeping, and in the morning you will wake up. In wakefulness, remember that this is a dream, and death is awakening. He began to look detachedly at the fantastic flashes of light, at the enormous luminous clouds and sparking stars, at the fearsome fire-breathing dragons flying past him, flapping their huge wings. All these impressions no longer affected him, and he found himself in the great silence filled with grace and light pouring from nowhere. It was the world of nirvana, in which he began to dissolve. Suddenly, at one moment, he became the entire universe, all galaxies, all stars and planets, all living beings. He saw the world through myriad eyes, heard it through myriad ears, acted with countless hands and limbs. He was everything and nothing at the same time, felt everything that all beings perceive and experience, and was detached from it. He was the Absolute. He was God. But now he returned to his body and felt how small and insignificant this flesh and personality were. It became cramped here, like in a stone coffin. He lost all sense of existence in this meager limitation called human life. In this stifling body, he felt like Christ on the cross, nailed to the paths of matter. He sensed his body and personality as a tomb in which his spirit was buried, and he only wanted one thing: to die, to attain that great state he experienced in Nirvana Samadhi. This narrow, limited human perception seemed to him like a small crack through which he was forced to perceive the world, being in this body. He felt like an earthworm crawling in the ground, when just moments ago he was an eagle soaring in the sky. Death was liberation from the wretchedness of human existence, from the constant suffering due to its limitations and the compulsion to live by the interests of the body and worldly personality. A life like that on an inanimate robot, constantly feeling cold, hunger, fatigue and pain, seeing the same dreary landscapes of the earthly world, solving everyday mundane problems. The way out of this dreadful ordeal, from this meat grinder, was only nirvana, in which he yearned to dissolve completely, leaving this body forever and breaking the cycle of deaths and births. He decided to continue fasting until death, so as to peacefully depart into eternity with prayer. It was already the 40th day of his fasting. Strength was slowly leaving him. His body was barely felt, bright visions of otherworldly worlds came to him in meditation. As usual, in the morning, disciples came to him for joint meditation, forming a semicircle around their master. "I am leaving this world. I am going to Nirvana. I have achieved everything. I have become enlightened. I have seen life as it is. Here we live in the cages of our bodies, in the chains of our worldly beliefs, acting as slaves to the instincts and desires implanted in us by nature, like robots executing the social program instilled in us in childhood. We are dead and blind. We are limited and insignificant. But having reached Nirvana, I have become the entire universe. I have attained the state of infinite bliss and absolute freedom from form, time, and space. Do not be deceived by this pitiful body, your little personality, this gray, meager world. And then you will overcome the wheel of deaths and births, break free from the cage of your body, and become a free spirit dissolved in God. Become Him and the entire universe. Do not worry about your small self. You do not even suspect who you may really be." Having finished his sermon, Bhagavan resumed meditation, slowly departing into eternity. Some of the disciples stayed with him to also fast until death and depart with prayer to a better world. Others, not completely detached from the allure of self and the world, decided to go into the world and bring to people the great knowledge they received from the great master. But now night fell, and the first stars lit up the sky, while the master continued to sit in the lotus position, waiting the end of his existence on earth. His entire life slowly passed before his consciousness. He saw scenes from his past in this and other lives. Here he is, a little boy sitting quietly on the couch, watching his grandmother pray in front of the icon in the corner, near the window.
"Grandma, what are you doing?"
asked her grandson.
"I am praying, my dear, talking to God, the creator of our universe. He loves us very much, and he wants us to love him. And when you pray and grace arises in your heart, it means you have felt the Lord's love for you. It means God is speaking to you in the language of your heart."
The boy knelt down and began to pray to God for the first time in his life.
"Lord, I love you very much. I want to be with you always,"
he repeated. And as he opened up and relied on, grace increased in his heart, and he was filled to the brim with the love of God. He could say no more, but overflowing with grace, he silently wept. He wept tears of happiness, having once again felt the love of his Father, having once again opened himself to receive his love in the cycle of rebirths. Grandma prayed in the morning and evening, but never went to church,
to avoid standing there among grumbling old women and deceitful priests in sneakers and jeans, sticking out from under their cassocks. She prayed to God in the temple of her heart, which was purer than gilded and glittering man-made churches. He also remembered his grandfather, who in his youth was one of Gurdjieff's disciples. When the revolution came, the grandfather fell ill and could not leave with Gurdjieff abroad. But coming to him one last time before leaving, Gurdjieff said, "You will stay here, and that is your fate. But it's even good, because you will undergo many trials here, much more than those who leave the country. And by practicing sacred efforts in these sufferings, you will be able to gather all the spirituality that people lost in the chaos of the revolution. I have passed on to you more knowledge than to others, and perhaps someday you will pass it on to your descendants." Grandfather survived famine, war, and camps. He was exiled from the capital to one of the harshest places in the country. But despite the terrible hardships and deprivations that befell him, he practiced sacred effort, constantly remembering God, observing himself, and remaining in a state of vigilance. His attention to the surrounding world was directed in three directions: to God, inside himself, and to the world simultaneously. And this great practice allowed him to develop his consciousness. Grandfather taught his little grandson to play on an old piano.
"Look, see,"
he would say.
"The piano has 7 full octaves. These are 7 worlds, our world, and 6 subtle ones. And at the end of the keyboard, there is the do note of the 8th octave. That is the absolute. And in the lower register, there is an unfinished octave of 3 notes, the lower unfinished world. Thus, in the construction of the piano, the ancient sages laid down the laws of the entire cosmos."
The grandson listened with interest to everything his grandfather taught him, and soon he learned to play the magical music of the celestial spheres, where each note had its meaning. Many more memories flashed through Bhagavan's mind. Death was slowly approaching him. His breath became more superficial, and the rhythm of his heart slowed with each passing minute. But then, as if lightning pierced the sky, he saw 1,000 faces of Buddha, Krishna, Allah, Jehovah, Shiva, Zervan, and millions of other forms and images of the one God. And he understood that the Lord himself had come to him.
"My son,"
thousands of voices thundered,
"you have reached nirvana, but I am preparing a different task for you. Go and teach people the great truth that you yourself have realized, and by passing on your knowledge to them, return to me. Return to me,"
echoed the thunderous voice, and the vision disappeared. Bhagavan sat, stunned by what had happened, but recognizing the will of God, he bowed down to the earth and said,
"Thy will be done! Thy will be done! Thy will be done!"
And rising from the earthly bough, he gained full determination to fulfill the command of the Father of the universe. Gathering his disciples, he proclaimed to them the divine command.
How can we awaken people from the darkness of ignorance?
Asked one of the disciples.
The bright egregore of the circle of Kailash priests will help us with that. An egregore is a being from the subtle world. Some of them are like angels, while others are like demons. They carry great or destructive ideas within them. And when people connect with these egregores, giving them their love and devotion, the egregore helps them follow its path and realize its ideas. For example, the destructive communist egregore, physically embodied by Marx, Lenin, Stalin, inspired people to revolution, giving them great power to accomplish it. In that unfortunate time on Earth, there was another, the demonic being, the fascist egregore, guided by Hitler. These egregores fought each other for the dominance of the world, which manifested in the Second World War, where the fascist egregore fell and the communist one was severely wounded and soon withered and died. There are also bright egregores of Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, Zoroaster. But in our time, they have almost perverted their original essence. They are almost dead. In Christianity and Islam, there have been no saints for centuries, and in Buddhism, there are no enlightened ones. The Zoroastrian egregore is also almost dead, and only the greatest egregore of the circle of Kailash priests, formed by the greatest being in our solar system, Rigdon Japo, is still alive. This egregore stands above all small religions, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, as it is not regional but universal. And precisely in our age, when our Earth is gradually becoming one state, the egregore of the circle of Kailash priests began to manifest itself to bring a unified, new, and at the same time, the oldest religion to Earth. The teachings from which all other religions originated. The circle of Kailash priests sent its call through the Roriches, Blavatsky, Gurdjieff, Sri Aurobindo, Rajneesh, many Tibetan and Indian masters. And now, the lord of the circle of Kailash priests, Rigdon Japo, has consecrated me to physically embody this egregore on Earth, which will spread its teachings worldwide, bringing happiness and prosperity. But this task is not easy, for many dark demons do not want the Earth to be cleansed of evil. And we will encounter their desperate resistance. These demons can come in the guise of priests, party members, authorities, murderers, and thugs. But we must unwaveringly radiate light, joy, and happiness to all the people of Earth, imparting great knowledge to lost human souls. And then, in the new millennium, the era of happiness and prosperity will come on Earth.
What must be done to fulfill this task?
Asked Mahapadma.
To achieve this, you must connect to the egregore of the circle of Kailash priests by chanting the mantra Aha Shambhu Itaha Hum with devotion and self-surrender.
If you tune in correctly, grace, joy, happiness, and power will fill your being. And then, any task in this life will be within your reach, as long as you carry it out for the glory of the great cause of the circle of Kailash priests in this world. May my blessing be with you. Concluded the Savior of Humanity, Bhagavan,
and all his disciples, raising their hands to the sky, echoed him with Aum.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org.